Welcome to Parents Perspective. Honey, Dick called, hanging up his coat and walking through the darkened rooms. I'm home. Where are you? No sound greeted him. He peeked into the baby's room and found her sleeping peacefully, her little fist wedged partway in her mouth. He smiled at the sight and continued toward their bedroom. It was hard to see in the shadows, but he made out his wife's silhouette sitting up in their bed. Cecily? He sat down beside her. What's the matter?
Oh, I don't know, she burst into tears. I don't know what's wrong. I just can't stop crying.
Are you feeling sick? Should I call Dr. Meadows?
No, I can't explain it, Cecily whimpered. I just feel like I'm under this black cloud and I can't get out.
Just then, the baby awakened and began to fuss.
You go get her.
Cecily turned away and pulled up the covers.
I just can't deal with anything right now.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about postpartum depression? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with families who are dealing with postpartum issues. Debbie Goldstein is a licensed clinical social worker with the Jewish Social Service Agency in Rockville, Maryland. She's the mother of two, a daughter in college and a son in graduate school. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Debbie.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, we hear a lot about postpartum depression, and we're not always sure exactly what the term means. Could you clarify it a little?
Sure. It's really a catch-all phrase for multiple postpartum mood disorders, and each mood disorder has its own pattern. There's four mood disorders. One is postpartum psychosis, which, thank goodness, is the rarest. It's only 1 to 2 cases per 1,000 births.
And that's pretty severe stuff.
That's very severe. The features include hallucinations, delusions, agitation, inability to sleep, and bizarre and irrational behavior. Now, an example of that would be Andrea Yates in Texas. And she was, in fact, psychotic when she killed her children. Now, she had a history of mental illness that had been going on for some time, even before the birth of her children. And that is something that we frequently see. The second would be postpartum obsessive-compulsive disorder, which is usually characterized by repetitive, intrusive thoughts, usually about harming the baby, fear of being left alone with the baby, and then subsequently hypervigilance in protecting the infant. The third is postpartum panic disorder, which usually presents early in the postpartum period and is characterized by frightening panic attacks, which include acute onset of fear, anxiety, rapid breathing, heart palpitations, and a sense of impending doom. But by far the most common and the fourth mood disorder is postpartum depression, which can include sort of what you were talking about in your story, you know, tearfulness, just crying all the time, not knowing why, changes in appetite, changes in sleep patterns, decreased energy, feelings of worthlessness, guilt, shame, difficulty thinking, or recurrent thoughts of death and suicide. And what I see is that most women report some of the more subtle symptoms initially, and they sort of talk about falling into the abyss as it progresses, because part of depression is that as you experience it, things appear gloomier. So that once
it feeds on itself, kind of thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you're depressed, your judgment isn't clear. So you see things differently. So it progresses downward, sort of into a spiral.
Are there certain types of women who are more likely to experience postpartum depression? Obviously, people who've had mental illness, but then there's this whole other huge group. Is there a set of symptoms or a set of characteristics that we could sort of be on the lookout for?
Well, there are certain risk factors, what we call risk factors, that have been reported to increase the probability of developing postpartum depression. Most of the time what we see is a combination of risk factors that puts a woman most at risk for developing postpartum depression. And it's important to keep in mind when talking about these things that the presence of any of these risk factors does not guarantee that a mother will experience postpartum depression. And an absence doesn't ensure that postpartum depression will not occur. Mm-hmm. The first risk factor and the strongest predictor of postpartum depression is depression during the pregnancy or a previous history of any sort of mental illness, which we've already mentioned. But if a woman is feeling like when she's pregnant, like it's a miserable pregnancy, I'm not happy, that would be a huge indicator or, you know, something for her to observe, for the family to observe, for the OBGYN to observe that she may become depressed. The second risk factor is what we call the maternity blues, which is sort of a transitory phenomenon of mood changes that can occur within the first few days after birth and lasts 1 to 10 days.
Are these connected with hormonal changes?
Yeah. At the time of birth, progesterone, estrogen, thyroid stimulating hormone all go from like, you know, a very large level to like zero, which is 0 to 2. So they believe that what definitely causes the blues is the hormone fluctuations. But the symptoms of the blues include labile mood, tearfulness, anxiety, irritability, and difficulty concentrating. And that occurs in 50% of women.
Wow.
Okay. Now, obviously, not everyone goes on to develop postpartum depression. But research has shown that each person's response to the shifting hormones is different. So that what's different about women who develop postpartum depression is their response to the shifting hormones is they can't pick up. You know, they'll get into the blues and it sort of won't improve. The third risk factor is what we call childcare stress. Childcare stress includes any stressful events related to childcare, such as health problems in the infant or difficulty in infant care related to feeding or sleeping. Difficult temperament in infants, such as being irritable, fussy, or difficult to console, can also contribute to childcare stress. The fourth risk factor is life stress. And here we're referring to significant life stressors that can occur during the antepartum or postpartum period, not just the unique life adjustment to parenthood. Examples of life stress include divorce, job change, death of a loved one, hospitalization, you know, subsequent to the birth. And these all would be a risk factor for developing postpartum depression. The fifth risk factor is lack of social support, which includes both emotional support and what we call instrumental support. And instrumental support refers to assistance such as help with household chores, babysitting, or running errands. So like if a woman, you know, doesn't have the means by which to go out and get baby formula, I mean, that's a lack of instrumental support, and she doesn't have anybody to sort of send out to get it for her. The sixth is the lack of satisfaction a woman has with aspects of her marriage, such as communication, affection, mutual activity, and decision-making. And what I've seen, I wouldn't say frequently, but sometimes I've seen couples, you know, young couples for, you know, premarital counseling or counseling right after they're married. And then I see they'll call me, you know, a few years later saying, I'm feeling horrible. I just gave birth to our first child. I can't touch the baby. So then we would deal with that because somebody who hasn't been completely satisfied with their marriage is going to be more likely to develop postpartum depression.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on postpartum depression.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Debbie Goldstein about postpartum depression.
Could postpartum depression begin a few weeks or months after a child is born?
Yeah, anything within the first year after the baby's born is considered postpartum depression. But for the vast majority of women, you see symptoms 4 to 12 weeks postpartum. So let's say that's 1 to 3 months after they give birth to the baby.
Are there preventive measures parents can take? When they're still expectant parents?
Well, other than to watch out for symptoms, I wouldn't say there's preventive measures. There's been a lot of research on interventions that prevent postpartum depression. It's been studied over the past several decades. And the majority of studies have been done with the already identified at-risk populations. And they include such psychosocial treatments as relaxation training, support groups during and immediately after birth, and classes about postpartum depression. And they were all effective in reducing the incidence of depression. So birth preparation, like if somebody were to, you know, do childbirth education and sort of, I've heard of a lot of groups continuing after the birth to act as a support group. I think that is a preventive measure, although they're not doing it intentionally to be a preventive measure. But in all the cases of the interventions that have been studied, what's most helpful and most consistent is the fact that these people are followed by a psychiatric professional all the way through their pregnancy and through the initial postpartum period, and so that anything is sort of referred quickly for assistance.
But it sounds like everyone who is having an impending birth really needs the circle of friends and relatives to be aware and be ready to be supportive and to be tuned in.
Right. Identifying sources of support is the most important thing, not only from friends, relatives, but also, you know, professionals in the community, medical support, psychosocial support, and that sort of thing. But it is, you know, it is so important because I've often heard people say that, you know, they will feel a certain way and someone will say to them, you look so unhappy, you know, and they like burst into tears, as opposed to, you know, feeling tearful at having a friend say to them, oh, you have nothing to be sad about, you have a baby, you know. Yeah. So that to be on the lookout for that with people you love, with your friends and your relatives and people you care about. At the present time, it's hypothesized that postpartum depression is caused by a combination of factors that impact an individual all at the same time. Now, these are the biological changes, some of which we've already talked about, which include hormone fluctuations, recovery from labor and delivery, and broken sleep cycles, which is also biologic, and the unique life adjustment to parenthood, and the vulnerability of new mothers.
I think one of the things we don't give enough credence to in our society is the vulnerability of new mothers. That was said very beautifully, because I think we all do feel vulnerable that first time we're given this beautiful package to take home from the hospital, and there it is, this lovely baby. Yeah. And I think all of us had a feeling of, now what?
Yeah. Now I'm responsible for
now
this.
I'm responsible. How am I ever going to do this? I never, you know, we knew, learned about changing diapers. You learn about all this other stuff. But the day-to-day and how you are able to respond to this helpless being at 3 a.m. when you feel pretty helpless yourself, and why doesn't somebody come and help out and all this? There's a whole range of feelings of vulnerability because you are vulnerable.
Right, right.
I remember that first day 33 years ago when I was left alone with my son, and there was no one in the house but me and him, and he was sleeping. And I was thinking, he's going to wake up, and I'm in charge. How could anybody trust me with this responsibility? Who left me here with this tiny baby?
And where are
you know,
they?
To be in charge? Or why isn't there someone else here? And of course, that moment probably comes to everyone at some point.
Right.
And it is very scary. And then you just start doing what you have to do, and you get lost in being very busy. And I was okay. But I can see where that vulnerability is so strongly felt.
And I think fathers also need that kind of support, because the fathers are thinking they're supposed to be supportive to the mother, but they don't know what they're supposed to be doing either, and they're probably more likely than the mother to think, oh my God, if I touch that thing, it's going to break, and what do I do next? And I remember two very intelligent parents who were thinking to themselves, you know, the baby was arriving pretty soon, and they couldn't imagine how they were even going to change a diaper, because they're both physicists. And they were thinking one was going to have to hold the book and read the directions while the other followed the directions. So we all feel this tremendous amount of helplessness, I think.
Well, and it's interesting because in other cultures and in more primitive cultures, women, when you go home from the hospital, you have the whole community there with you. The women in the community come and assist and show you how to do everything. We're living in an industrialized modern culture, and it's not like that in any westernized culture. It's just, you know, more Eastern culture and things like that, where there is that sort of protective measure that's built in.
Even in the United States 100 years ago, we didn't have families that were so fragmented.
Right.
Usually you were in the town you were born in, and there was Great Aunt Mary down the street, and your mother and your mother-in-law and other people, so you were surrounded too in a
right.
way that well, we're not now.
Well, which is the etiology of lots of, you know, sort of life stressors nowadays, which is the fact that you don't have extended family around, or you're not living with extended family the way it used to be.
Debbie, what would you say are some of the possible effects on the baby and on other members of the family when a mother is going through these kinds of problems?
Well, unfortunately, the mother-infant dyad is acutely sensitive to the mother's responsiveness and mood. Depressed mothers tend to have two predominant interaction styles, either withdrawn or intrusive. Postpartum depression can lead to really vicious cycles of impaired patterns of relating between the infant and mother, because rapidly developing infants are dependent on their mothers to constitute their primary social environment, and they experience the world through the persons that care for them. Infants of depressed mothers tend to be fussier, they tend to vocalize less, they tend to make fewer positive social expressions than infants of mothers who are not depressed. And this has been documented repeatedly through research in recent decades. Now, not as much research has been done on these children over time to determine sort of the cumulative adverse effects on them from living with and being socialized during the first year of life by mothers with postpartum depression. But it's hypothesized that postpartum depression has a small but significant adverse effect on children's cognitive and emotional development.
So it's like putting a damper on it.
Right. Now, again, there's not research longitudinally over time, but in terms of the early stuff, you know, sort of the baby, I don't know if you can remember it. It's sort of this love affair, and it's, you know, the smiling, and when they smile, you smile back, and they see your face light up. They, you know, so there's all that. It's sort of this feedback loop. So if that loop gets broken by the mother, you know, the baby smiling at the mother and the mother bursting into tears, it's going to cause problems for the child. Obviously, the silent victim in the family is the husband. And you mentioned that before, since he is often responds with confusion, frustration, anger, fear, guilt, and feelings of inadequacy, because he can't really do anything to make his partner feel better. And researchers are just beginning to investigate the incidence of postpartum depression in fathers. And they're significantly more likely to be depressed if their partners are experiencing postpartum depression. And in some of the initial research that's been done, up to a 27% prevalence of depression during the first postpartum year in fathers has been reported.
Wow.
So that's pretty significant.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on postpartum depression.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Debbie Goldstein about postpartum depression. How do professionals treat postpartum depression? And how can a woman recognize if she needs professional help?
professionals treat postpartum depression with either psychotherapy or medication or a combination of the two. Now, at least initially, therapy should focus on symptom relief and support measures to enable the woman to return to her previous level of functioning as soon as possible. Goals in therapy are accomplished through reassurance, comfort, practical suggestions, empathy, and helping to mobilize the resources and coping skills. Once this is accomplished, therapists utilize different treatment strategies depending on what symptoms are most prevalent in the individual. Group therapy can be fabulous, cognitive behavioral therapy, interpersonal therapy, psychoanalytic therapy have all been successful.
Do you want to explain what cognitive behavioral therapy is, just so we know?
Well, it goes under the premise that negative thoughts create negative behaviors. So sort of if you're going to think real negatively, so it sort of trains, cognitive behavioral therapy would be training you to think in a positive way. And that's it in a nutshell, in a very succinct way. Antidepressant medication can be a very effective tool in treating postpartum depression, especially in the more severe cases of the illness. But the only thing that's tricky with that is that if you're breastfeeding, it creates a dilemma because the medication would go through the breast milk. So they're unsure as to what the effects are of long-term exposure on the infant. So frequently, if a woman has severe postpartum depression, they will suggest that she stop breastfeeding and then put her on medication. And the women that have been treated with the medication, it's rapid. You know, anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, they can see improvement. So they have not in any way, they said that the interaction between them and the child was so much better that they didn't mind the fact that they stopped breastfeeding. The newer medications, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or the SSRIs as they're referred to, are very effective in treatment of postpartum depression. And those would be things like Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Lexapro, and they have fewer side effects than the previous generation of antidepressants. Women often don't recognize that they're depressed, especially when it's not such a pronounced depression, when it's not, you know, tearfulness and things like that. And they also don't recognize that their symptoms are worsening. Now, sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. So the important thing is that if there's any doubt, to seek professional help. And don't just ask your doctor, what's wrong with me? But say to your doctor, or have your husband say to your doctor or your mother, can I have a referral to a therapist, to a psychiatric social worker, a psychologist, a, you know, a psychiatrist? I feel like I need to talk to somebody about some stuff that's going on with me. Or contact one of the organizations that I'm going to mention a little bit later, because they have referral sources within your area. And just to keep in mind, the number one obstacle to treatment is shame, because culturally, in our culture, women feel that this should be the happiest time in your life. You have this beautiful new little baby. But it's not a personal weakness. It's not something that makes you a bad mother. This is something that happens to a certain number of people, and it's very biological. So to not feel shame, and even if you do feel somewhat shameful, just to, you know, go for help. There is so much help out there if you just go for help.
And so, just think, so many people have made their careers helping people, so there must be plenty of people who could use the help.
Must be a need.
Yeah, really.
At this point, we need to leave our listeners with the resources that you would recommend for anyone who needs to learn more about postpartum depression.
Okay. Well, there's just a wealth of information out there if you have access to the internet. The two major organizations are Depression After Delivery, or DAD, and their website is www.depressionafterdelivery.com, all lowercase. And they also have a phone number. It's 1-800-944-4773 or 4PPD. And their website is really fabulous. You know, you can take a little test that says, you know, if you suspect you have postpartum depression, click here and they'll give you a test. And then after that, they give you referral sources. And it just has answers to any of the questions that someone might have if they're experiencing some of these symptoms. The second largest organization is Postpartum Support International, or PSI. And their website is www.postpartum.net. Their phone number is 805-967-7636. There's a number of other great websites if you have access to the internet. They are www.postpartumhealth.com and www.postpartumstress.com, all lowercase letters. And again, there's a wealth of information on any of these sites, including a father's page, including a grandparents page, and it addresses everything in greater detail than I've mentioned it today. If you don't have access to the internet, two really fabulous books that should be in your local public library are This Isn't What I Expected, Overcoming Postpartum Depression by Karen Kleiman and Valerie Raskin, and Beyond the Blues by Shoshana Bennett and Peck Indman. So, you know, and again, all I can say to anybody or a loved one of anybody who's experiencing this is to reach out to someone, reach out to a friend, or, you know, just ask somebody for a referral to a psychiatric professional.
Well, this has been extremely helpful. We all have our marching orders, and we have all learned an awful lot today. So thanks, Debbie Goldstein, for joining us to clarify some of the issues involved in postpartum depression.
Thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, Second Edition. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 212. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.